The rest of you obviously not on Twitter. Jamie Vardy broke the record yesterday for scoring in the most consecutive Premier League games. He plays for Leicester City and he's just scored in his 11th consecutive match. That's the best ever in the Premier League. It's the best in the English top flight since the 1930s. Well, as a teenager, Jamie Vardy actually was on the books of my team I support, Sheffield Wednesday. And they let him go as a 16-year-old because they said he was too small. And there they are languishing far below the lofty heights that Leicester have attained. We see that sort of thing all the time, don't we? Somebody who is cast aside, looked down on, who then shows themselves to be much more valuable than perhaps they were first thought. You see it in things like Britain's Got Talent, and most famously perhaps with Susan Boyle a few years ago. You might remember that. She came onto stage and didn't really look like very much. You know, not made up what she was wearing. She didn't look like the sort of person who would become an international star. And yet when she opened her mouth and started singing, you just realized that all those preconceptions were very, very wrong. We know that we shouldn't judge a book by its cover. And yet that is something that all of us do all the time, nonetheless, isn't it? All of us are instinctively making judgments about people's skills, talents, potential, or perhaps the lack of those things. And it might even be that you're here this morning as someone who's rejected or who's thinking of rejecting Christianity because of the way that you view Jesus, or perhaps the way that you've seen a Christian behave in a way that doesn't match up to what you would expect. Well, this passage, 1 Samuel 16, reminds us that God's ways are not our ways. He doesn't see or think the same way as we do. And if God's view and my view are at odds with each other, well, they're not two equally valid options, are they? If my view and God's view are at odds with each other, well, it's me who needs to change. And as we go through, we're going to see how that affects how I then think about other people, how I think about myself, and then particularly perhaps how I think about the king, how I think about a leader who I want over me. That's the immediate context of this passage in the book. If you've been here through the term, you'll have seen how we've been moving through this section of 1 Samuel. The question is, what type of king do Israel want? When they come up with the bright idea of having a king, they say they want a king because they want to be like all the nations. They want a king like all the nations, and that's actually what they get. They get King Saul, and we've seen how he started well but then tailed off. They wanted a king like all the nations, but in fact, God promised them something better. God promised them a king after his own heart. And that's what they'll get in David. And as I mentioned, that's going to play in to how we think about Jesus. But let's go through this passage. Saul, then, is the king, but he's on borrowed time. In chapter 13 last week, we saw how he performed a sacrifice that he shouldn't have done. He broke God's command. If you're in a growth group this week, you'll have seen in chapter 15 how, again, he broke God's command. And so in chapter 15, verse 23, the second half of that verse, Samuel says to Saul, "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." That's it. Saul's time is up. He remains king in name, but he's no longer king in substance. And so this passage is going to show the move from a king like all the nations to a king after God's own heart. That's what's going on here in chapter 16. Verse 1, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you grieve over Saul since I've rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I've provided for myself a king among his sons.'" Well, of course, Samuel objects that Saul's not going to be too impressed with a coronation party while he's still sat on the throne. So God says, "Well, take a sacrifice with you. Have a religious ceremony with the people of Bethlehem." By the way, Bethlehem, of course, is very significant to us, isn't it? We know the name Bethlehem, and it's so important as we head towards Christmas. But for them, it's not. In the context here, it's just another town. small, insignificant place, not a major center in any way. Bethlehem, go to Bethlehem and have a sacrifice there. Well, anyway, here's Samuel, the great prophet. He turns up at the gates of this small town. And how do the elders react? Well, in verse 4, it says, they came to meet him trembling and said, "Do you come peaceably?" They're not used to Samuel turning up. We all had that feeling sometimes, haven't we, of somebody asking to see us. You know, like when the church wardens ask to see me, and my heart is filled with trepidation and trembling. But you might have had the same if, you know that your form teacher or the head teacher wants to see you, or the boss calls you into the office. There's just that little moment in your head. What's happened over the last week? Is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing? Well, here are the people. They're worried because Samuel has come to them, but Samuel reassures them. He says, "Consecrate yourself." It means get ready. It's like a ritual act. Get yourself ready because we're going to have a sacrifice, a celebration to God. And so then the scene is set. Samuel is there. God's prophet, the one with the special jar of oil for the anointing, the horn of oil. Jesse is there, and his sons. Now, Samuel has already been told that it's one of the sons who's going to be the next king. Now, we don't know whether he told Jesse that or not, but Samuel knows, and we know, that one of these sons has been chosen as king. The question is, which one? Well, here comes Eliab, the oldest, and Samuel is suitably impressed. And so Samuel says, when he sees him in verse 6, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Surely this is the one, God. I've come all this way to Bethlehem, but I can see why you've sent me here. Such a fine specimen of a man. But God has rejected him." God says in verse 7, and this, of course, is the key verse for the passage. So if you go over nothing else this morning, take this verse and think on it through the week. "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" There's Eliab. He's tall, he's strong, he's good looking. In fact, he's another Saul. If you were here when we looked at Saul, do you remember how Saul said he was a head taller than any other man in Israel? Here's another Saul, another king like the nations. But God is teaching Samuel, and he will teach the people of Israel, that that's not how you choose a king. You don't choose a king by outward, but by inward factors. So the next son comes, Abinadab, no. Shammah, no. Four others, no, 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 no. It's like when you're looking for something and you've looked everywhere. And you start looking in places you know it couldn't possibly be. You're opening drawers that you haven't opened for 2 years just to see if you might have put your keys in there. Samuel's looking around and he's saying, well, God definitely sent me to you. You are Jesse, aren't you? This is Bethlehem. Have you got any more sons? Well, of course, there is another son. But God's choice of king is so surprising that that son isn't even there. They've left him in the field. It says, halfway through verse 11, "There remains yet the youngest, but behold, he's keeping the sheep." It's going to be significant that he's looking after the sheep, but we'll come to that. Anyway, they get someone to go and get him. He's brought in to the celebration. Verse 12, it says, "He was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome." So just note, there's nothing wrong with being good looking in itself, which is a huge relief, I know, to some of you. David is described as, he's fine, he's handsome, he's got a good appearance. But actually, that is not the priority here. Because God has rejected those who've got the stature and the strength and the prestige of being the firstborn and the mighty sons. He's called in the youngest son from the field. And he says, "This is the one. Arise, anoint him," it says at the end of verse 12, "for this is he." And so there, in the presence of his brothers and his father, David is anointed. A couple of things we need to note about this. It is a surprising choice as king. He's not the one that they're expecting. But also, very clear through this passage. It's a divine choice. This is God in control. This is a divine choice. We've said the whole time, there's nothing wrong with wanting a king, but it's their motive for wanting a king that was a problem. Samuel himself, this great leader of the people, he's still looking for a king like all the nations. Even Jesse, even David's own dad, has left him in the field. He's not important enough to come along to this family or this celebration entertaining the famous prophet. You can almost imagine the thought process in Jesse's head. Well, this is man's business. Leave the boy in the field. But God says, no, this is my business. Bring the boy in. My ways are not your ways, declares the Lord. The Lord sees not as man sees, again in verse 7. Man looks on the outward appearance. The Lord looks on the heart. Where we're so consumed with outward things, with appearance, with things that we can look at and things that we can assess, God is concerned with the inward, with the heart. And we say, take such care on this topic in other areas of life, and perhaps just not always in the way that we relate to each other or even to ourselves. But you think when you move house, you look at a house and how do you judge it? Well, you don't just judge it by what it looks like from the outside. Well, you're foolish if you do. You get someone to check it out. Is it as good as it looks from the outside? You go round. You look in the different rooms. Well, that's what we need to do when we assess an individual, a human being, a Christian. Not just look on their outward achievements and what they look like to the human eye, but in some way we need to penetrate and see what they look like to the divine eye. This is what it means. This is what God meant when he promised a king after his own heart. It's a bit of an odd phrase, isn't it? Two types of king, remember? A king like all the nations, or a king after God's own heart. What does that mean? Well, it means a heart that beats in time with God's. Heart in the Bible doesn't just mean emotions, but it means the essence of a person, the real you. And he's saying, look, this is an individual after God's own heart, is somebody in tune with God. In David, God has identified for himself a faithful boy who would become a faithful man, and indeed, a faithful king. Two types of king. Well, that's general good advice for us there, that we don't just get taken in by outward appearance, but we look to go deeper. But as I said at the beginning, don't judge a book by its cover. That's folk advice, isn't it? We know there is some wisdom in that. What's this passage really telling us more deeply? What's it got to say to us as Christians here living 3,000 years after the event? Well, firstly, how you think about Jesus. The Old Testament prophets pick up David as the pattern of the Messiah who's going to come. So David is there from obscurity in Bethlehem, and Micah comes along and says that the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem. David is overlooked due to his stature or his age. Isaiah says of the Messiah that he had no form or beauty or majesty to attract him, nothing that would pull us to him. David, what's he doing? He's out there being a shepherd, caring for the sheep. And Ezekiel picks that up and he says God is going to provide for himself a new David, a shepherd king who's going to look after the people of Israel. And so all the time when we see David, for us living this side of the cross, we're looking at Jesus and saying, how is David pointing us towards him? We've lit the first candle. Advent is here. The countdown has started. We're celebrating. What are we celebrating? The birth of a baby. Born where? Born in Bethlehem. Born without the trappings and surroundings of majesty and power and kingship, but born in poverty in a stable. the one who was overlooked and looked down on by so many, and yet the one who said, I am the good shepherd, and I will take care of the sheep, but how will I take care of them? He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. That was God's choice of Messiah. A man so completely after God's own heart, because Jesus, of course, is God himself in the flesh. That's God's choice of Messiah. Is that your choice of Messiah? What do I mean by that? Are you ever frustrated with Jesus because he doesn't provide what you think he should? Do you ever get confused or cry out or get angry that, Jesus, I'm following you, and yet you're not providing the protection, the prestige, the power here and now that I need? I feel like I'm being dragged through the mud. That might be you as a Christian. If you're not a Christian, you might be someone who thinks, well, I look at Jesus and I don't see anything special. I don't see anything that I haven't seen in 100 other wise teachers and philosophers down through the centuries. Some people dismiss Christianity because Jesus looks so weak and ineffective, and yet Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and the way that I am going to shepherd the sheep is by going to the cross. And if you will be my people, you must take up your cross and follow me. This passage helps us think about Jesus, because it helps us view Jesus as the one out in the field, looking after the sheep, perhaps despised, perhaps looked down on, perhaps forgotten by many, and yet God's choice of king. That's how you think about Jesus. What about how you think about others? We've touched on this already, but man looks on the outward appearance, God says, and we know that to be true, don't we? We do have an inclination to admire the cover and ignore the contents. And you see this at school, you see it at work, in social settings. We all have this inbuilt desire to align ourselves with those who we think look good outwardly. We want to be associated with those who are tall, powerful, not just physically, but those who are impressive outwardly. Who are the popular ones? Those who are funny, those who are intelligent, those who are influential. What are we looking for? Well, we're looking around and we're saying, I want friends. I want colleagues. I want leaders like all the nations. I want people with characteristics that I will look on and say, yes, I admire that. That is what I want. But God says, don't buy a house without opening the front door. What you need to do is not judge by the outward appearances, not judging by the things that the world thinks are so important, but judging by really what's inside someone. Open the door and have a look. Well, of course, that's not so easy. You know, Superman, when he's caught in a little an issue, he's behind a closed door or something, or he wants to see what's in a safe, what does he do? He just has to tilt the glasses and he can x-ray vision. He can look through. He can get in. And that would be great. If you came into church and perhaps the person welcoming with the sheets could just look straight into your heart and say, you better sit on the left. You better sit on the right. We'll do that for next week. We know we can't do it. We can't really see into the heart. We haven't got that perfect knowledge that God has got. And that is why God looks in a way that is different to the way that we look. Because we can't help being taken in by the outward things, by the appearance, by how somebody comes across. But this is warning us that that is not all there is. Because God looks on something much more important. God looks on the heart. And that at least is a warning to us that we know that is what we should look for. What we should value most in somebody is the type of person they are at heart, not how they look on the outside. Particularly those of us who are claiming to be Christians. How we look at one another. We're not looking at those who seem super spiritual, as Kim alluded to at the start of the prayers. We're looking to those who have a heart that beats for God. And how does this apply to our search for a vicar? Well, of course, all through the term, we've been looking at that. We've been trying to apply it to that. as the people of Israel search for a godly leader, so we look for a godly leader. Now, any leader we have is, of course, under Jesus, the true Messiah and King. But when we look for a vicar, what are the things we're looking for? Well, not primarily his age or his accent, his eloquence, his education, his experience, his family, his sense of humour. All of those things might be important to varying degrees. But what we need to look for is his heart. Is it a heart that beats in time with God? The word pastor, you know, sometimes we use the word vicar in Anglican churches, but sometimes you hear the word pastor for a church leader. That word means shepherd. Because that's the role of a church leader, to be a shepherd out in the fields, caring for the flock, the sheep, God's people. And that's what we should be looking for, a vicar who you're going to find out in the fields with the sheep. Not at the party, drawing attention to himself, but the one who's doing the work that he's called to do. The Lord looks on the heart. Well, our reps are charged with that task. And we've got Stuart and Richard here, and Richard and Linda from Little Eaton. They're the ones who'll be interfacing with the candidates. We need to be praying for them that they have the wisdom to be able to see through the outward and into the inner. How you look at other people then, look for hearts that beat in time with God. Thirdly and finally, we'll finish with this, how we think about ourselves. How do you rate yourself as a person? How do you rate yourself as a Christian? Well, man looks at the outward appearance. And so perhaps we rate ourselves as a Christian depending on how many services we attend, which rotas we're on, how much of the Bible we've read, how long we spend in prayer. Again, all good things which are important to varying degrees, but not the measure we use, because the Lord looks on the heart. And what we should be yearning to be is to be men and women after God's own heart. Is that something that you want? Of course we fail in countless ways. Of course we're nowhere near perfection in this life. But do we have that desire in us that we would have a heart that beats in time with him, that we would live in a way that pleases him, that we're more concerned with what he thinks of us than we are than what other people think of us, that we're more concerned with the state of our heart than we are with the state of our hair? Jamie Vardy, cast aside by Sheffield Wednesday, now flying high with Leicester. Susan Boyle, laughed at by many when she walked onto the stage, now very wealthy and very well known. But perhaps much more importantly, David. Certainly much more importantly, David. Rejected by family, seemingly out in the fields, and yet called in by God because he had the heart that yearned for God. Jesus, the true Shepherd King, who came to care for us. And so those who would follow him, that we would have that heart that beats in time with God, that we would be people with after God's own heart. Let me pray for us. Father God, we thank you for this passage which reminds us of how you view us rather than how we view ourselves. Would you help us to take away lessons that we've learned and to care truly more about your opinion than that of others. We thank you that you look on the heart, and so we offer ourselves to you again this week and pray that our hearts may indeed beat in time with yours. Amen.